Dip, 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 dip. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la,
butter. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, butter. Good evening. This is the Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. Please note, this is a replay of a previous Labor Exchange Labor Radio program from Monday, June 10th, 2019. The subject at that time was an update, political issues for senior retired Americans. With us was a special guest, Ed Ogden, President, Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans. Ed, great to have you back on the Labor Exchange at KGNU.
Well, thank you for having me on, Dennis. It's good to be here.
Ed, let's, as we always do some background to familiarize the listening audience with you. So as in the past, could you detail for this KGNU listening audience your journey as a union teacher with the Denver Public Schools and then AFT, American Federation of Teachers, union president, and now president of the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, I was a Denver Public Schools teacher beginning in 1968 and into my career in 2000. And during that time, while I was the, I played various roles in the Denver Federation of Teachers, Local 858. I was the I was the treasurer, vice president, president, and an activist, as many of the teachers, other teachers were. Upon my retirement in 2000, I did a variety of things, and then I got involved with the AFT COPE, and they asked me to serve on the board of directors for the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans, and then a year later, I was asked to I was nominated and elected to become the president of the that was in 2013, and I've been president since. I don't know. Doing a fairly good job, I guess. It depends on who you ask.
And I've been with you all the way. I've been a member almost from the beginning of the, formation of the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans. I believe I am, but that's a good segue. Who is the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans, and what is its ongoing mission?
Okay, so well, first of all, the Alliance, Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans, is a chapter, a state chapter of the Alliance for National Alliance for Retired Americans, that has been in existence since 2001. It was preceded by the National Coalition of Senior Citizens, and it was that organization that was succeeded in lobbying for Medicare, Medicaid, and the expansion of Social Security. And our ongoing mission. You ask about our ongoing mission. Our ongoing mission is to look out for the interests of the vital interests of senior citizens in particular. But we have to be conscious of the fact that we have to be also aware of and championing issues that are important to those in the workplace right now.
And we should let the listening audience know it's not an exclusive organization.
No.
But it is primarily, you know, retired union people, men and women alike. And with that said, I can't remember. How many members are there in the state of Colorado?
There are approximately 30,000.
30,000 members of the Alliance.
Right. And
that's quite a bit. I didn't know that. That's very impressive. Ed, let's move on to more like into the content of the show, and I have this under Colorado State Legislature 2019. The 120-day session of the Colorado State Legislature concluded Friday, May 3rd, 2019. With that said, how active were you, other officers, and members of the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans at the state capitol during this session?
Okay, we have a committee, a legislative lobbying committee, that's chaired by Mona Moffitt. And she does a terrific job, and she's the one that spearheads all of this. And she sends us the legislation. We look at this legislation, these proposed bills, et cetera. Then we also have other members of the committee. Sarah Gallardi, she was former state representative. Ken DeBay is on the committee, and occasionally Sheila Leader has been there. So we've got some really good people down there, and I come in and play kind of a backup role. I don't get as involved as I'd like to get, but my role as president takes me into different directions, and so I don't testify this time, but I have testified in the past. Well, Mona testifies, and I can tell you how we affect.
Well, that's what I was going to ask next. Did you and I've testified as well, but were there other members, beyond Mona, with the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans testify on various bills in the House Senate committee hearings.
Oh, yes, yes. Sarah testified, Ken testified, Mona testified. Mm-hmm. All of them did. And I don't think I did this year because there were some conflicts that I had.
Yeah, and I always think that's good, is because when you're looking at a state senator or a state representative, whatever committee it's in, they like to, you know, there's an issue and they just don't, you know, emails, phone calls are fine. But when they're looking at a face and they know this person, you know, represents, you know, like you said, 30,000, you know, retired Americans, they listen.
Yeah, we hope they do.
regardless of what party they are. So in addition, could you, you know, and this is outside the hearing rooms and outside the chambers, but could you discuss lobbying efforts with these elected legislators? And there's 35 state senators, there's 65 state representatives, 100 total. It's a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure exactly what you mean.
Lobbying,
by
you know, in other words,
how do we approach them?
Yeah, how you approach them, meeting them out in the hall, okay. Maybe make an appointment and go to their office.
Right.
All of them have offices.
Yeah, we've met with various legislators individually. We meet with them in groups. And of course, we communicate with them via email. That's probably the most effective way to get hold of them is through an email. But I find in my own personal, if I can get to talk to them, that I can have more influence with them. I think they'll be more understanding of what we're trying to talk to them about.
I agree. And you have a real close relationship with your state representative and your state senator.
Yes, I do. And they're both two really outstanding legislators. They're full freshman legislators. Our state representative is Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez, and by the way, she is the granddaughter of Corky Gonzalez and the first of his descendants to serve in public office in the legislature. I mean, and then our state senator is Julie Gonzalez, no relation, but they're both very hardworking, and they both have interests that are similar to what we need to have in the legislature for working class people.
And approximately how many bills did the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans Lobby Committee, and that was Mona's the chair, how many did they monitor during this session?
You know, I'm not sure exactly how many we monitored. I know that there were about 600 pieces of legislation this year. So that gives you an idea of the volume of things that you have to keep up with. And that's what Mona's is best about. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go over this. And you talked about just a little bit, but you might want to expand. How would you evaluate the overall effort here by the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans and other senior lobby groups, Bob Epstein, I think it is, and
yes,
groups during this session?
How effective were we?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's hard to say. One of the things that I wanted to do was to start a conversation about the COLA that was for PARA, that was that's been taken away for 2 years. And because I thought we could at least get a piece of legislation introduced, but we couldn't even get that. And I'm thinking about not just people in my situation, but I'm thinking about that retired highway worker who put in extra hours, and now we ask him on his limited pension to give up more, to maybe have to make a choice between a food item and a prescription, a drug prescription. And I think that's a terrible choice for them to have to make. But we didn't get anywhere with that, so I can't say that we were that effective. But, you know, I mean, there were some areas where we were. We did manage to, I think we're going to talk about the Homestead Act, but we did manage to offset to delay an attack on that.
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to add in a couple other things that we talked about before, you know, we came in here to do this interview. But let's start with it. I mean, let's go to this first. How did the political climate change for the benefit of senior retired Americans at the state capitol since the November 2018 election? And you know where I'm going with this. You know, the state Senate is 20 Democrats and 15 Republicans, and the state House is 40 Democrats, 25 Republicans.
Well, we were able, you know, we've got a better, a more friendly political climate for people and that you know, basically for people of limited means that I, you know, that I try to represent. And how do I want to answer this? I'm trying to get, I'm trying to give you a straight answer here, and I'm not sure I can. So try that again. I want to just
It's like. The climate changed for the better.
Yeah, it changed for the better.
And in other words, you had more people that were advocates and friendly to, you know, retired senior Americans.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We got a lot more people in there that we mentioned, okay. that we just talked about. My own personal representative, my own personal state senator, they are much more aligned with what we need. They're much more compassionate. They about the issues that affect seniors and other issues as well. Of course, they've got to represent their whole districts. But I really felt as if that we've got some new voices in there, and I think that with these new voices in the next session in particular, we're going to have more success.
Just to finish up on this part before we move into the length of the session in term limits, but what tactics did the Republicans employ to stop and or slow this progress, not just for retired senior Americans legislation, but labor legislation in other progressive groups?
Well, one tactic they employed, I'm sure you're familiar with this, is they asked to have each bill read in its entirety before the session. And what usually happens is that the bill is read, scanned electronically. And so you don't spend a long number of minutes reading that bill. Well, that could take up to an hour to read some of those bills, I think. And that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to delay, and then, of course, knowing that we have a 120-day limit, they get to a certain point in the session when it's no longer feasible to pass that piece of legislation.
All right, then I wanted the listening audience to know that I read about that, and you know, I was privy to that, but they were doing it because it was part of the Constitution. They had the right to do that, and but it's not really past practice.
Of course, that's their constitutional right, but it was an effective legislative technique tool. I don't think so.
Anyway, Ed, you know, let's talk about not part of my draft and everything, but something we want to talk about. What's your opinion in others in terms of just the length of the 120-day session?
Well, I just mentioned we had a lot of pieces of legislation that will die because of the time limit. If there wasn't a time limit, if the legislature was not constitutionally restricted in determining the length of the session, then there could be other pieces of legislation that could get done. That doesn't mean that we're asking them to be able to even, you know, being beat year-round. I think they can set a limit themselves upon that. And that they'll know that if they get to a certain point, that maybe they'll have to extend that session. Or maybe they'll get to a certain point and realize they can actually shorten it. But that's my thinking is, this is my political science background here, is that what we have today is what, it's called direct democracy, but the Greeks call it mob rule. And that's done through this, and through term limits, and through Tabor, which we'd like to talk about as well.
Next thing is that we both talked about it, and I'm pro and con, but you know, I do have a concern about it. When I have my state representative, Speaker of the House, Casey Becker, who I just think is great, and my state senator is the Senate Majority Leader, Steve Fenberg. But, you know, she's term limited. You know, her 8 years is going to be up, and Steve, I think, is just in his first term, but we've seen this in the past with people we like. People have been advocates, but they end up being term limited, and that's it. So what you wanted to talk about that?
Yeah, I do, because I think that what we've done is eliminated institutional memory with term limits. You can only learn so much in an 8-year period, and beyond that, you know, you're at a loss. And what I see happening is that we get these people in there, and they learn a certain amount, and then they just move up the career ladder. They move from the state House to the state Senate, and then maybe up the ladder, or they take another road, and that is they become what I call lobbyists in waiting. And they're just waiting around until when they finish their terms, they have to wait 2 years, and then they can start lobbying. And that's what they started out to do. Well, I think I go back to a period of time. I remember a period of time when we had legislators on both sides of the aisle who, because they were there for such a long period of time, learned to work together. I remember when I was working in youth services, not directly, but as a board member, and we succeeded in getting Republicans to come across the aisle and believe that it was better to not incarcerate a child, even a violent offender, than it was to incarcerate them. They have that institutional memory was there, and it existed for a long time. Now I think it's not quite there as long, it's not there as much. And it's the same thing in senior issues, for example. We talk about the Homestead Act. I think a person who's been there a long time knows more about the Homestead Act. You know, I see people that if you ask them about Tabor, for example, they're not there long enough to really understand it. So what their response is, we just have to live with it.
And we're going to get the Homestead Act here shortly. But let's talk about, you know, something upbeat and, you know, in terms of legislation. And could you explain the prescription drug legislation signed by Governor Paulus? And with that said, what kind of positive impact will this legislation have on senior retired Americans in the state of Colorado?
Yeah, as you know, we just signed a bill, and it was his idea, actually, to pass this bill to get prescription drugs imported from Canada. And that's going to, of course, bring the price of drugs down, because in Canada, they don't allow the profit motive into the drug industry. So that will bring the price of drugs down, and, of course, that's going to make it easier on senior citizens who, as we mentioned earlier, have to often make a choice between food and drugs. So, and I mean drug prescription.
And he's done an effective job of communicating with Washington, D.C., the Trump administration, because he has to get the, you know, anointed or the okay to actually formalize this process with Canada.
Yes. Right.
And so, yeah.
It's just in the process now. And so it's not a done deal, but and I don't understand the particulars of the deal. So.
Neither do I, but I just know that he's reached out, and I think he hasn't someone say no. You know, I think he has, you know, actually, I think there's a tendency that, you know, that it might be okay.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. But okay, you mentioned this, and, you know, I know you're anxious to talk about it. I'm always anxious to talk about this, because we're both recipients of this. What is the Homestead Act, and how has it benefited senior retired Americans in the state of Colorado?
Well, as you know, the Homestead Act was passed to allow seniors who've been in their homes for at least 10 years to be exempt from paying property taxes on those on that home.
Well, not completely.
Not completely, but I mean,
about $100,000on the first $200,000.
Right. Yeah, they get a break. Is what I mean to say. And because of that, of course, that makes it easier for them to get along. And you know, a lot of the people without that exemption maybe couldn't stay in their homes.
Exactly. I mean, is it, you know, when you look at it, I've looked at the numbers and everything like that. It runs into the hundreds of dollars.
Right.
And you know, it's a really good savings, but. Could this important law, I think it has in the past, become compromised in the state legislature?
Well, as you know, this year there was a bill that would have replaced the Homestead Act. And it would be a bill, I can't remember all of the details, but I do know that it would be,
step one, step two, step three.
Yeah, so that people would not necessarily get that exemption. And for many people right now, I heard people talking about, well, if they replace the Homestead Act, my mother's got to leave her home. So, you know, I think that they're going to have to give that a lot of thought before they pass anything that replaces the Homestead Act.
I agree 100%. Ed, let's move on to this. It's like, I don't think there's any specific legislation, because a lot of this, you know, has federal implications, but could you talk about the critical issues of pensions and retirement security?
Well, you know, pensions have been on the chopping block for decades because especially large corporations have wanted to get rid of defined benefits and replace it with defined contribution, which means, of course, things to translate that defined benefit is kind of pensions like para, and defined contributions are like 401ks. Now, what we're finding out is that 401ks in particular are a bad deal for seniors because we're not in the marketplace. We're no longer out there in the workforce. So we don't necessarily want to make an investment. We want to have a defined pension coming in every month. We don't have the resources to play the stock market. And that's what 401k is really doing.
Yes. And the one thing is, too, is if people have built up, let's say, you know, they were pretty good, you know, or they're, you know, with the matching employer contributions with maybe by the time they get to they want to retire, they look at that and go, well, I got 100,000 or maybe I got a $250,000 in there. But people are living longer.
Yeah.
And if you like take, 10 years of that, that would be like 25K a year. But if it's like 20, it's even half of that. And the thing is then it's gone. But if you have a defined benefit pension, which I have and you have,
right?
But, and it's still part of, you know, what those of us that are union and worked union for many years have. And I'm deeply privileged and happy and that I do have it. I'm thankful, grateful. But on the other hand, with people, sometimes they don't even get 401ks. They just, you know, they just got to keep working.
Yeah, they do. I've known a number of people that had 401ks, and they invested used it for investment, and then they went broke, and then they ended up back in the workforce. At age 70, I mean, that's be a tough time to re-enter the workforce, I would think.
Yep, it sure would be. What could the state legislature and the U.S. Congress do to benefit, greatly assist all senior retired Americans with this issue?
Well, of course, I mean, at the federal level, of course, what they need to do is to enhance Social Security. Quit taking funds out of it. Take money out of it. Here at the state level, the state legislature needs to quit underfunding PARA. It needs to quit underfunding education. It needs to quit underfunding health care. That's the basis for many of our problems that we're looking at. And that's what we're doing through Tabor, is we're underfunding. We're underfunding our institutions. And as we do that, our institutions are crumbling.
Well, I didn't have this, but, you know, it's important to talk about. Talk about Tabor and what, you know, and how this is, you know, complicating and adding to all these problems.
Well, as you know, Tabor has a ratcheting effect. So each year you basically have to spend less than you did the previous year. Or if you have an excess, you have to give that money back to the taxpayers. So you can't keep it and build a nest egg and start keep maintaining the highways and so forth that we have today, and plus be able to enhance and build for the future. That's what we've not done. We've only been trying to keep up. It's like in Denver, for example, Bill Owens managed to get through the legislature money for T-Rex. And this is going to was going to reduce congestion to, a minor problem. Well, if you look at what there is today, it's even worse than it was before T-Rex. So we keep trying to do the same things over and over again, or now they're trying to expand I-70 in Denver, and as a result, they're just exacerbating the problems. Okay.
And quickly, and we might not do justice to all of them.
Okay.
Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, but the first one's the main thing. How has Medicaid been a major benefit for millions of people in the lower socioeconomic class? And how will Trump's plan or other, you know, previous plans or present plans to slash food stamps and Medicaid inflict, quote unquote, major misery on millions of poor people, especially elderly single women living on very meager fixed.
We're talking about life and death situations, literally. And so for some people, this is going to mean they're going to die earlier because of the fact they're going to be taken away from their medications and or asked to go out and in, back into the workforce where they have, when they have, many of them don't have the, have the abilities to do that.
All right, then, and how has Medicare benefited millions of older Americans since it was signed into law by President Lyndon Baines Johnson on July 30th, 1965? We're getting up on 54 years. And with that said, how could Republican proposals, past and present, undermine the recipients of Medicare?
Well, how is it? It's kept people from having to live with their kids, for one thing. If the Republicans have anything to say about that, people will be living with their kids again. That's a direct effect.
And because one of their things is that Medicare has been a great thing to keep people healthy and live longer.
Right.
And what they, it just seems like they want to hammer away on privatizing.
They've always been able to, they've been trying to do that for years. If you remember back in George W. Bush's first administration, he had a proposal to privatize Social Security. Well, we saw where that went to. I don't think that's going to work. I don't think the people are ready for privatizing Social Security. I don't think they're ready for privatizing Medicare or Medicaid. And I think that what's happened to the defined benefit pension plans illustrates why.
All right, then we got about 2 minutes left, so let's hit this one. How has Social Security benefited millions of older Americans, many others as well, since it was signed into law by President FDR on August 14th, 1935? And we're getting up on 84 years, which I think is tremendous. But with that said, you know, you can talk about how it benefit, but what present, past and present attacks with this great program continue to possibly cause harm to all senior retired Americans?
Well, I mentioned the type of things that George W. Bush tried to do, privatize Social Security, not put in money into Social Security, and so forth. And so that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get it to a point where they can, you know, drown it in the bathtub. But as I said, I don't think that's going to work. I think the people are getting their backs up, and they're saying, no, you're not going to privatize Social Security, and no, you're not going to privatize Medicare.
You've done great with covering everything I wanted to, but I'm getting into a summary. You got about another minute left. Do you have any final thoughts or comments for this KGNU listening audience in the context of tonight's subject, update political issues for senior retired Americans?
Get involved. Get out there. Go to those town hall meetings. Meet with your, get to know your city councilman. Get to know your state representative. Get to know your state senator. And then lobby them. Lobby them privately. Lobby them publicly in public meetings.
And you do that as well as anybody I know. I mean, like I was teasing you, you know, with how you just on a spur of the moment when the reporter Karen Morfitt walked into you and some of your buddies, you know, in a bar or something like that. You're having a weekly, you know, cocktail or whatever. And
we were celebrating a birthday.
Yeah. And so I saw you on TV. And,
and
your friend Larry, his name?
Yeah, Larry.
Yeah, you did a great job, you know, because you want to save this one particular structure in North Denver there. And,
right.
From, you know, super-duper development of 55 townhouses and just kind of destroy the whole character. So
right.
That's a classic example of Ed Ogden. So thank you for being on Labor Exchange at KGNU,
thank you.
Ed Ogden. And for those of you who've joined us late, the subject of tonight's program on Labor Exchange was an update, political issues for senior retired Americans. And with us was Ed Ogden, president, Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans.
If you have any comments about this show or any other show on KGNU, please call 303-447-9911. And next week, Monday, February 24th, 2020, please listen to La Lucha Sigue at 6 p.m. This has been the Labor Exchange, and I am Dennis Kreese for KGNU Community Radio.